1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Richard Cantu. Federal prosecutors say it's time for former Trump aide Steve Bannon to go to jail.
With a three-judge panel of the D.C. Circuit Appeals Court rejecting Steve Bannon's effort to overturn his conviction for contempt of Congress, prosecutors say it's time for Bannon to begin serving his four-month sentence. Reached by ABC News, Bannon was sarcastic, saying he's, quote, shocked they want to silence the voice of MAGA. Bannon refused to appear before the House January 6th committee, which sought to ask him about his statement on the eve of the riot that all hell would break loose the following day.
ABC Stephen Portnoy. It was primary election Tuesday in a handful of states. In West Virginia, incumbent Republican Congresswoman Carol Miller beat back a challenge from convicted January 6th insurrectionist Derek Evans. Caitlin Clark made her WNBA debut, scoring 20 for the Indiana Fever, but committing 10 turnovers in a 92-71 loss to the Connecticut Sun. This is ABC News. From the Good Luck With That file, another lawsuit against the U.S. law requiring TikTok's Chinese owner to sell to a U.S.-approved buyer or be banned.
The eight plaintiffs in the lawsuit say they've had more success with TikTok than with other apps.
Here are 100 events and things to do.
Talia Cadet promotes black-owned businesses.
So I took out my cell phone.
Kira Spann advocates for sexual assault victims.
That is what TikTok can do.
The suit claims the law forcing a sale of TikTok from its China-based owner violates these users' First Amendment rights. Lawmakers argue the app poses a national security threat while it remains under Chinese control. Stephen Portnoy, ABC News, Washington.
In South Dakota, Governor Kristi Noem is now illegally banned from entering nearly 20% of her own state. Five Native American tribes have banned Noem, and leaders of a sixth are recommending it over comments earlier this year about tribal leaders benefiting from drug cartels. Noem might be under consideration as a Trump running mate. Richard Cantu, ABC News.
The Todd Allbush Show.
The fantastic Jane Matt Nair of Matt Nair on Air. I'm a big fan of like the Rose Bowl, the Orange Bowl, the Cotton Bowl. Well, now from Snoop Dogg, they're going to have the Snoop Bowl, the Snoop Bowl. How about that, Jane?
I think we're missing the obvious. Where's the Punch Bowl? Where's the Toilet Bowl? I think that there are other bowls that are being neglected.
I think it could maybe be the Snooper Bowl, though.
The Todd Allbush Show. Weekdays, noon till 2. On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Maggie Dawn Show.
So I have super parallel parking skills. And on the east side where I live, I will often sit on my front porch and like a play-by-play call as if it was a sport. Parallel parking to me is a sport. I'm the Stephen A. Smith of parallel parking. That should go on a t-shirt.
We'll get you one made.
Oh my gosh.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. A healthcare system serving eastern Wisconsin is working with the FBI to try to unfreeze their computers. Ascension Health officials confirmed last week a ransomware attack has frozen their computer system. Ascension isn't saying how much money the hackers want. The University of Wisconsin-Madison Extension is using a $1 million federal grant to teach the public about large-scale solar and wind farms in different communities. Extension's Sherry Gruder says communities are also urged to give feedback.
Endangered species in the area, will they be protected to what happens to the water and the wells when the land isn't being farmed for that time?
33 large-scale solar developments are in place or under development in Wisconsin. And that's what you need to know. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
The Brewers beat the Bucks. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Game 2 of the Brewers and Pirates series at AmFam Field. The play of the night, Milwaukee's Sal Frelick at center field. The batter, Andrew McCutchen. The call on Bally Sports Wisconsin.
To center field, Frelick on the move. Frelick's back, and he's got it! Oh, Superman at center! Sal Frelick, game in Milwaukee.
That was a perfect. perfect route to that baseball. What a catch. And it kept the tying run from coming to the plate.
The final score of the Brewers 4, Pittsburgh 3. Sal Frelick also hit his first home run of the season. Brewers manager Pat Murphy on why Frelick's now coming alive.
He's young. You know, remember how young he is and then think about trying to play in the big leagues. And it's not just he's not just physically gifted. We wore him out a little bit in spring training, and now he's kind of settling in. So I'm happy for him.
That's Brewers manager Pat Murphy with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Mostly clear skies and mid-40s in the overnight with a gusty northeast wind. On Wednesday, sunny skies, highs in the low to mid-60s. Wednesday night, a few more clouds. By Thursday, we'll see some showers developing, highs in the upper 60s. Right now, it's 51.
John Mino and Jim Schmidt.
On the next show, we'll be moving with the Malcors. Ben and Deanna Malcor will be in to talk real estate.
Plus, Abby Novak joins us from downtown Appleton to tell us about their Light the Night event that's coming up.
Mino and the Mayor, weekday mornings 6 till 9.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for the Todd Allball Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Good morning, and welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Mock. Calvin Butenoff coming to you live from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join the conversation. You can call, you can text at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Or you can leave a comment on the live stream if you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. We're going to be joined at 10:33 by our friend and colleague and the executive producer for Civic Media, Luke Mathers. We'll be here to kick around some news.
Will he bring associate executive producer Aurora the Puppers?
Aurora Puppy? I do not know if she's working today. I think she's part-time. She's only 4 months old.
Oh, then she's an intern.
Yeah, essentially she's
gotcha.
An intern.
Okay.
So we will see if Luke shows up with with Aurora, his associate producer. Coming at 11 o'clock, this should be a very interesting conversation. Andrew Gurman is a former president of the American Medical Association. And he has banded together with a large number of other healthcare professionals and doctors to talk about what could happen to our healthcare under a second Trump administration. So Andrew Gurman is going to bring his experience to this conversation that will come up at 11:06, if you can stay tuned for that. Right now, we want to start off with a little bit breaking this morning, right before we went on the air, because I heard you and Pat Kreitlow talking about it. When I was on my way in this morning, Governor Evers has called a special election for two districts. The special election for the 4th Senate District is going to be July 30th. If a primary is needed, it will be held July 2nd. Voters in that district will be the only ones going to the polls on that day in Wisconsin. And then the special election for the 8th Congressional District will be held on the same dates as the August 13th primary and the November 5th general election. So voters in the district will vote on the same dates as everybody else, not a different day.
Yeah.
I guess I'm a little bit surprised. I was not, like, I have all this experience and so much contact with the governor. I guess I wasn't expecting him to call a special session for this.
Everything I had heard, it said that the seat was going to be left vacant after Mike Gallagher left, which, as a reminder to those listening, seemed timed out because he left just after a time when there wouldn't have to be any sort of election or any sort of thing. It would just be open until
the
next January or until election.
Until the election day in November.
Yeah. So this doesn't, I guess my question is why not just do an election it's going to be, I'm just confused. Honestly, I feel like a dum-dum right now because it doesn't make sense to me why he would want someone to serve in that seat
just for a couple of months,
3 months, 2 months, 2 months.
The Milwaukee Senate seat vacated when former state senator Lena Taylor resigned to become a Milwaukee County Circuit Court judge. So far, two Democrats have announced their campaigns for her seat. State representatives Lakeisha Myers, who we just had on the show, as a matter of fact, and Dora Drake. So a primary there is likely. Candidates can start circulating their nomination papers today. and they have to file them by the 4th of June. And then as you were talking about the Mike Gallagher seat, his vacancy may be filled in the August and November primary and general. Those running that have who have announced that they're running to replace Gallagher, former state senator Roger Roth, an Appleton Republican who ran for lieutenant governor in 2022, state senator Andre Jacques, Republican from DePere, and former gas station chain owner Tony Weed. And then we have Kristen Lierley.
Yes.
Dr. Kristen Lierley and several other. Is she the only Democrat running?
I believe so, yeah, because I think there were a few, and then they kind of came together and said, all right, let's. She's running for the congressional seat, and then the two others going to run for state seats. Now that I'm thinking about it, too, like, if you get in November, because you'd start, you're filling that seat for a couple months before the permanent person comes in. This all makes no sense because you're going to be there for like a week and a half. You're going to get your nameplate on something, and then you're going home for Thanksgiving. Then you come back for a little bit, and then you go home for Christmas. It's going to be a solid 2.5 weeks of work, if that. This doesn't make, I guess someone make this make sense. Maybe Luke Mathers can help it make sense.
Otherwise, Dan Schaefer will be here on Friday.
Fair point.
And I'm sure Dan will want to talk about this in the recombobulation area. I'm sorry, I have to take my coat off. It's like 9,000 degrees.
Yeah, it's very, very warm in here and has a cologne-y feel to it.
All right. In other news, Wisconsin Republicans are essentially holding an interpretive dance session today all around the state because it's purely performative. It's just performative. Wisconsin Republicans in the Senate convening today to try and override dozens of Governor Evers' vetoes, including his rejection of a PFAS funding bill. And the governor announced he'd take the legislature to court over money for a literacy program. This is from WPR from this morning, the latest example of the two sides fighting over the details of how money gets spent in state government. Essentially, they don't have enough votes to override the governor's vetoes in most cases. So again, this is purely performative. It accomplishes nothing. And I'm shocked they came back from vacation.
Well, that's, you know, they came back from vacation and I just feel like their MO now. It's, we can't possibly get it done. So when we can't get it done, we're going to go back to our districts and say, look what they can't let us do.
The
Democrats are keeping us from doing the work when you didn't do anything to begin with. It's just, I mean, it's performative, like you said. And there was a picture in the paper of them with their wonderfully printed board, which, by the way, we pay for.
Right.
And it's creating and crafting the narrative of, we would help the farmers, but Governor Evers
won't let us.
We want to help the students, but Governor Evers won't want to do it. Do you like clean drinking water? Governor Evers won't let you have it. No, that's not the case at all. Not even close. And you know it. But you want to go back to your districts and say, we couldn't do anything.
855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Tom from L.A. joining us this morning. Good morning, Tom. What did you want to say?
First off, I'd like to acknowledge Greg on his cry sound. That was very
good. Oh, thank you. I worked really, really hard to sound like Howard Markline.
You did a very, very good job.
Thank you.
Second, you know, what is the difference about working 2 or 3 weeks where the Wisconsin legislatures took off like what?
10 months.
10 months. Yeah, they get 10 months off. Yeah.
So, you know, these welfare these welfare legislatures who basically take the Wisconsin taxpayers' money and do absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
So when you talk about that election where someone might be there for 2 weeks to get something done, that actually might be more than they got done in a whole year.
You're probably not wrong, Tom. I think you make a good point.
Tom, get some tea in you. You sound sick. So
I got a cold today. So
yeah.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate you.
Absolutely. Get to rest, man. Feel better.
Yeah, feel better. Absolutely. Again, looking at this article from WPR this morning, the PFAS bill, of course, subject to months of back and forth between the governor and the Republicans. So why did the governor veto it? Here is why.
Yeah.
It was unacceptable because it essentially gave the DNR no regulatory power.
Yeah.
So go ahead and pollute. Naughty you. We're not going to have any enforcement measures on it, though, so don't worry about it.
Once again, the rich people getting away with whatever they want to get away with. Well, meanwhile, the regular people like you and me.
Republicans argue the governor's veto is stopping communities affected by PFAS from getting the relief they need. The governor says Republicans are to blame because they won't remove what his office calls provisions to protect polluters and force taxpayers to pay for the cleanup instead of the polluters.
Yeah.
Again, I would think this is something that most of us could agree on.
And conveniently, that point was left off of Howard Mark Klein's board. It didn't say, we want to get rid of the PFAS, but also we want to protect the polluters, and they're fine. I guess the trickle down is more pollutants than it is money.
Well, and we've talked about this before, too, which is really disturbing, that many companies build into their business plan fines.
Oh, yeah.
For polluting. Yeah. Or polluting, or I don't know, their train derailed again.
Well, and that's also why they're more than willing to pay a settlement out, as long as they have that little statement in the settlement that says accepts no responsibility or admits no fault.
Yeah, exactly.
Then they get to somehow walk away and say, "But we did it, everybody. We're fine."
Governor Evers used his partial veto on a bill that would spend $15 million for health care in western Wisconsin, which is really in a crisis right now after those multiple hospital closures. He argued it was overly narrow and did not cover enough medical services because the Republicans only wanted that money to go to emergency services. Hospitals do more than just emergencies.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also on the Senate's agenda, prospective overrides of vetoed bills about wolf hunting, student teaching requirements, and work permits for minors, because who needs a childhood? They're nine. It's time. Let's go to work.
To quote Ron Swanson from Parks and Recreation, child labor laws in this country are destroying us.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. You know, they should be able to work at nine. They should be able to work at 8 years old. We should be able to we should take 12-year-old children and put them in a nursery to take care of 7-year-old children. They're going to learn, Jane. Hard work.
There was actually a lawmaker, and I think it was in Missouri, who is arguing for more child labor. Because she went to work at nine, and look where I am today. Well, that's good for you. If your parents wanted you to work at nine, I started babysitting when I was 11.
I was delivering papers at 12. It depends. Like, yeah, if a kid wants to take up, if a kid's at 10 years old can handle taking up a part-time job like mowing lawns, I'm all for that. But it's a slippery slope, and I'll use that term, a slippery slope from mowing lawns to factory work.
Yes.
So, no, sorry. I don't care how old you were when you started working. And if we can get to that eventually one day, that rant from that woman is amazing, because it's just the biggest NIMBY grumbling, get your dog off my lawn, turn down your rock and roll music the kids don't understand, and all they're doing is twerking on the Instagrams speech I've heard in a long time. Because it's just so vitriolic.
855-752-4842. Join the conversation and stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air, coming to you across the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Talk of Green Bay, WGBW. Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected to your local community. Here's Terry Barr with the Civic Media Radio Network.
If you hear a siren, it could be a response for help after a fall. Oshkosh Fire Chief Mike Stanley says it's the number one reason for calls to his department.
much more significantly than we responded. Fires to heart attacks, car accidents, you know, traumatic injuries. You know, we're going on fall calls, you know, more often than not.
Stanley hopes a new partnership with the company behind a free balance training app, Nimble, NYMBL, can help seniors avoid falls by improving balance with exercises from the app.
I can do this from my home. I can do this from my living room, you know, so that I don't have to worry about securing a ride to go somewhere.
Look for more information going out with water bills across Oshkosh this month. Until next time, I'm Terry Barr.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for Matt Nair on Air.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Mettner, Greg Bach.
Gregory Bach.
Calvin on the board. It's at bringing some class to our program today. You can always join us at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream. If you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, and or Twitter, we talked about this last week, I want to say, Greg Bach, when Representative Mark Pocan, Democrat from Wisconsin, apparently was in a meeting with Postmaster General Louis DeJoy. And they wanted to talk about what's happening to our mail.
Yeah.
And why is it taking so long? And where is it ending up? And why isn't it getting where it needs to be in a timely manner? Calvin, do we have that clip? Let's listen to Mark Pocan.
I wanted to give you a quick update on a meeting we had yesterday with Postmaster Louis DeJoy in my subcommittee hearing on the Appropriations Committee. First of all, it was a little bit odd. Almost every hearing we have is a public hearing so that people can watch it on TV and you can be informed about what was discussed. The Postmaster General apparently didn't want to have a public meeting. And after the meeting, I completely understand why. I didn't think it was possible, but Louis DeJoy figured out how to bring Democrats and Republicans completely together. I read through complaints that we've had in my district about mail not being delivered. And then I listened to people in Georgia and people in Nevada and people in Iowa and Democrats and Republicans all talk about problems they have mainly due to management decisions by the Postmaster General. DeJoy was very combative. All he could say is that his job is to save money. The good news is, afterwards, I was fist bumping with Republicans and we were talking about trying to do a joint bipartisan letter because we were not satisfied with the responses that we got. Maybe in this dysfunctional Congress, there's that little bit of hope that we could have in trying to do something bipartisan. If you are a Postal Board of Governor and listening, fire up. But for everyone else, I just wanted to give you a quick update.
So here is your latest update, and this came down yesterday from Reuters. Postmaster General Louis DeJoy has agreed to pause planned further consolidation of their processing network after a bipartisan group of senators raised concerns about mail deliveries. We can actually agree on a thing.
I mean,
they did a thing.
Congratulations. They managed to create. They managed to do a thing. There you go. Yay! Thank you, Calvin. It's really good.
You did something. You know, you're earning your $174,000 a year. We're so proud of you. It's, you know, well done.
My only concern is that they say they're going to halt it or postpone it. My concern is that they'll just start doing it when we're not looking, when the heat's off, if you will. You know what I mean? Like We're talking about it now. We're looking at them now, saying, "Hey, we need to take care of this because people who rely on you, they're like, all right, well, you know, we'll halt and
then, I'll behave."
And then when we're not looking and something else is happening, they're like, "Start it now."
DeJoy says the change will delay the cost savings of $133 million to $177 million. One official says he will keep pushing DeJoy and the Board of Governors for a plan that isn't going to interfere with critical mail service. And this is a big issue for people in rural areas. It absolutely is.
The saving of money should never trump getting
service.
Your service and your mail. And here, I have an idea, Jane. It just popped into my brain right now. Go with me on it.
All right.
You know how the IRS has gotten more support and more resources to go after individuals who've shirked paying their taxes, i.e. their tax cheats? Mm-hmm. Let's take some of that money and, if we can, fund the USPS, or, like, you know, if we are allowed to do that. Because I know they're part of the executive
branch.
It's
a really complicated relationship.
But we got some extra scratch coming in. We can give it to the post office and maybe make it a little bit better. They don't have to consolidate. They can expand maybe and make it easier and helpful. And that way they can stop asking me if I want to buy tape when I'm there. So I never need to buy tape from them.
I have never bought tape at the post office. Always stamps.
Yeah.
Always stamps. Yeah. Never tape. Mounting anger in Congress about changes the Postal Service has said are needed to cut their projected losses. Some lawmakers have raised concerns about shutting down a processing center in one state and then moving it to another state. So that's what they're doing, is they're closing down these processing centers. And then, but again, people get their medications through the mail. They get checks in the mail.
They get bills, you know, through the mail.
They get bills through the mail. Yeah. Not everybody has direct deposit and stuff like that.
We got a text from the 414 Sue. Says, we paid $30 to send an envelope to Chicago overnight, quote unquote. That's in quotes. That was on a Tuesday. It was delivered on Friday. No real explanation. Just kind of like, it is what it is from the USPS. Needless to say, I went in and got my money back.
Wow,
I
mean, you got your money back, Sue. That's remarkable.
That's another applause break right there. I'm saying, there we go. I mean, I don't doubt it. Like, nothing's perfect. Nothing. Everything is infallible, and I'm sure the USPS makes mistakes. But it doesn't help them if they are having their funding taken away and things are consolidated to save money. As Louis DeJoy has said, is his only job.
His only job.
His only job. Okay.
Not to ensure that the mail gets delivered.
Yeah.
Not to ensure that the mail gets delivered in a timely manner.
Yeah.
Just to save money.
Yeah. To heck with the customers.
Last week, DeJoy defended his 10-year restructuring plan. Quote, this massive and complex evolution includes correcting for decades of haphazard decision-making and neglect to our physical infrastructure network, adding that USPS knows it must make improvements within the time limits we have for survival. And I find this to be a very complicated, the whole funding issue between the government and mm-hmm. the Postal Service
yeah.
and how that all works. The Postal Service in November did report a $6.5 billion yearly net loss as first-class mail fell to the lowest volume since 1968. That's another. Our habits have changed.
Yeah, we need.
We don't write letters.
The USPS needs to adapt, but I think, in my opinion, consolidation just sounds like pulling necessary resources. There's new ways of doing things. And it sounds like, I mean, I'm sure there's a study out there, but I don't trust Louis DeJoy. I just don't, because he was part of that whole let's slow down the mail campaign during the actual campaign. The
election. Yeah.
So
yeah, I would agree that he makes me a little twitchy.
Yeah. Louis DeJoy.
Luke Mathers will be here when we get back from the news. You can always join the conversation if you care to call and or text or leave a comment on the live stream. Stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Thank you. You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
ABC News, I'm Richard Cantu. Federal prosecutors say it's time for former Trump aide Steve Bannon to go to jail.
With a three-judge panel of the D.C. Circuit Appeals Court rejecting Steve Bannon's effort to overturn his conviction for contempt of Congress, prosecutors say it's time for Bannon to begin serving his four-month sentence. Reached by ABC News, Bannon was sarcastic, saying he's, quote, shocked they want to silence the voice of MAGA. Bannon refused to appear before the House January 6th committee, which sought to ask him about his statement on the eve of the riot that all hell would break loose the following day.
ABC Stephen Portnoy. It was primary election Tuesday in a handful of states. In West Virginia, incumbent Republican Congresswoman Carol Miller beat back a challenge from convicted January 6th insurrectionist Derek Evans. Caitlin Clark made her WNBA debut, scoring 20 for the Indiana Fever, but committing 10 turnovers in a 92-71 loss to the Connecticut Sun. This is ABC News.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Wisconsin Senate Republicans are voting to override 9 of Governor Evers' vetoes. Critics say the moves are symbolic at best and election year posturing at worst. The overrides include bills to fight PFAS pollution and a population goal for gray wolves. Republicans don't have enough votes in the assembly for the overrides to hold up. Liberal justices on the Wisconsin Supreme Court sound inclined to reopen unstaffed absentee ballot drop boxes. During oral arguments Monday, Rebecca Dallet said there's nothing in the law banning drop boxes.
We operate in the law with a general concept when the legislature writes a statute that things are permitted unless they're forbidden.
The race for president is expected to be close in Wisconsin. And that's what you need to know. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
I'm Pete with the 60-second Showbiz Beat. The Marvel train keeps on rolling, this time with Nicolas Cage. Cage will play an older version of Spider-Man in a new live-action show called Noir on MGM Plus and Prime Video. The 60-year-old actor plays a PI who is down on his luck while trying to come to terms with his past as Spider-Man and New York City's only superhero. The show is being adapted from the Marvel comic Spider-Man Noir. I like the PI angle, but trying to wrap my head around a Spider-Man with a gut and saggy man boobs who pulls a muscle every time he has to spin a web. Speaking of Marvel, Chris Hemsworth, or Thor, is tired of actors bad-mouthing Marvel Studios, saying it's not fair to want to be in a Marvel film and then bash it if it doesn't do well. Hemsworth was too classy to mention names. The New York Post was not. Christian Bale and Anthony Hopkins. Hemsworth talked about how much it hurt getting hate from directors like Scorsese, Coppola, and Tarantino, who he calls heroes. You see the irony? For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 7 to 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Mostly clear skies at mid-40s in the overnight with a gusty northeast wind. On Wednesday, sunny skies, highs in the low to mid-60s. Wednesday night, a few more clouds. By Thursday, we'll see some showers developing, highs in the upper 60s. Currently 49 degrees.
Mino and the Mayor.
Did you see the dumbest thing I did? Catherine, who we just love here, she runs the whole company pretty much. She brought, like, Blues Brothers glasses. So she wanted us all to walk in together wearing the black glasses. So we're sitting in the thing, and I'm reading the program. Reach my glasses, where I always carry it, put them on. It's like, holy crap, they dropped the lights. Now I can't read anything. So I take them off. I put my sunglasses on. How dumb is that?
Mino and the Mayor, weekday mornings 6 until 9, on the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, and Oshkosh Air Support, WISS. The Todd Alba Show.
Trumpster asked the judge and said, hey, can I not come to court because I want to go to my son's graduation? So here now, from the raw story, Trump plans Minnesota fundraiser on the day of Barron's graduation. When I graduated, you have a get-together with family and friends. It's kind of a day. A parent shouldn't just be ducking in and out.
You have to be a parent for that. And he is a parent in name only. A pino.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2. On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up next on the show, we talk to the co-founder of Courage MKE, 1133 public service announcement with Dr. Laura Hanks. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Good morning and welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, Sweet Cal B coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join us. You can call. You can text at 855-752-4842 or leave a comment on the live stream if you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, and the platform that Elon continues to actively ruin. Joining us from our headquarters in Madison, although I think you're at home, Luke Mathers is here, our executive producer. Luke, you were here in Waukesha yesterday on the board for Calvin, who had a little day off. So welcome back.
I was, yeah. Thanks for having me back. And yes, not from the world headquarters, from the home studio of Casa de Mathers.
Casa de Mathers. Excellent, excellent.
That's Spanish for House of Mathers.
Thank you, Greg. Perfect.
I'm smart.
But we like to rotate our colleagues and friends at Civic Media, so we kind of do this on a rotating schedule. Always glad to have you join us, Luke. Coming up at 10:50, I'm looking forward to this. We're going to debut a new segment called Wanker of the Week, which we haven't done before. It's a really, and this is a very, very special edition.
Yeah. And we're going to say
Ted Lasso cut. Yeah, I was going to say, do you have the Ted Lasso cut of just everybody shouting Wanker?
Oh!
That's funny.
Brilliant.
That would be funny.
Brilliant.
Yeah, that's coming up at 10:50, so stay tuned for that. Right now, though, we are going to talk about Donald Trump in court. He is back in court today. And his former fixer, Michael Cohen, is back on the stand. Just to set the scene, I think it's important that we take a look at the difficulty this is having on the former president. And Jesse Waters from Fox News was particularly concerned about this a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, yes.
I think, you know, to be sensitive, we should take a listen to that. So, Calvin.
Bad
but
boys,
the guy
bad
needs
boys.
Exercise. He's usually golfing. And so you're going to put a man who's almost 80 sitting in a room like this on his butt for all that time. It's not healthy. You know how big of a health nut I am. He needs sunlight and he needs activity. He needs to be walking around. He needs action. It's really cruel and unusual punishment to make a man do that.
It's so mean. So mean.
How is his spray tan going to get darker if he doesn't get out in the sun?
Well, and then I believe it was also a commentator on Fox talking about how the courtroom is ugly, and that is affecting Donald Trump's mental health. So apparently,
no gold curtains gold-plated nameplates or anything like that for the judge?
Apparently, they should have redecorated for him before the trial started, because it's just so hard on him.
I give it up to Fox for finally talking about mental health issues. It's been a while. I mean, come on, man. Get on board.
It is concerning whether or not the courtroom's cafeteria has the 3 square meals of Big Macs that the former president needs each and every day while he's in court. But yeah, right up there with tarring and feathering. Cruel and unusual punishment.
Yep.
Tarring and feathering is usually the first one that comes to mind. And then right after that, having to sit through a trial for your criminal allegations of paying campaign funds to cover up a hush money payment to an extramarital affair.
It is important for folks to remember that he's not being tried because he paid off Stormy Daniels.
Yeah.
He's being tried because he hid the fact that he paid off Stormy Daniels because he didn't want this to get out before the election, because that could have affected the outcome of the election if the general public had been made aware of this.
I think had it been made aware within the first 2-3 months of him, you know, descending on the golden escalator, maybe. But if that had come out in, like, I don't know, September, October, people would have been like, oh, this is my God right here. It wouldn't have made a difference. I don't think it would have made a difference in the end. It wouldn't have been an October surprise. Because at that point, he had said so many don't look at me like that, Luke.
I just disagree wholeheartedly, Greg.
Well,
I apologize.
Okay, but by that point, by October, November of 2016, he had said so many things and made so many claims that every week it was this is going to tank his election.
And nothing
this is going to tank his campaign. He made fun of this person. Well, he's done. He said this on a bus on television on a hot mic. he's going to, that said, we got to find a different person. Nothing touched him after a certain point. So I think had it come out earlier, maybe. Later, no one would have cared. It would have only emboldened him and his fans more because they would have loved it.
See,
he lost one third of his endorsements from Republican congressional candidates in 2016 when the Access Hollywood tape came out at that end of September, beginning of October. The amount of voters that decided the 2016 election in Michigan, Pennsylvania, and our state of Wisconsin was so few that I think this truly could have swung. Like, it would not have affected New York voters. I think you're right there. But it would have affected the general election outcome in the three states where it mattered the most, that it was criminal. It was election interference. That's, everybody wants to refer to it as a hush money trial. But truly, this was Donald Trump's first attempt at election interference back in 2016. And so you can have that opinion, Greg. Maybe that's the case. You can't prove something that didn't happen. I totally understand that. But I think between how many breaking news stories came out that October. The Comey letter saying that Hillary Clinton was still under FBI investigation for the email scandal that came up 10 days, I believe, roughly before mm-hmm. that yeah. election in yeah. November.
Yep.
The Access Hollywood tape. Like, there was so much going on that had this broke late in the campaign, I think it could have made a difference in those three states to determine what the electoral college outcome was back in 2016. See, but we'll never know.
But I agree with you, Luke. And I think especially for suburban women, yes, not all, Greg okay. Bach, but right. certainly a percentage of suburban women might have finally said...
I'm not saying it would have changed it from those voters going and pulling the lever for Hillary Clinton back in 2016, but it might have prevented some people that went to the polls and voted for Trump that election from going and turning out, or like what we saw in 2020, they could have just skipped the top of the ticket portion of the ballot. They could have voted for Republican candidates for state assembly, state senate, for U.S. House and the U.S. Senate, but just skipped voting in the Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump matchup of 2016. And so the less than 100,000 votes in those three states determined the Electoral College outcome. And I think this could have swung 100,000 voters in those three states.
Luke Mathers is our guest. He's the executive producer for Civic Media, and we're talking about the Donald Trump trial that's going on in New York, in Manhattan right now. Very interesting opinion column from Jennifer Rubin in the Washington Post. And it just says, karmic justice, women might seal Trump's fate in New York. That would be fascinating. And I think that would be poetic justice.
If there's not white women, it will. Because they're the ones who helped get him in office in 2016 and voted for him in bigger numbers in 2020.
So. Former Trump employee Hope Hicks gave two essential components of the DA's case after vividly describing the terror that swept through the 2016 Trump campaign in the wake of the Access Hollywood tape, making it essential for the campaign to avoid another humiliating sexual revelation and to silence women who had damaging stories to tell. And Hope Hicks also hammered home the purpose of the hush money cover-up. She said that when word of the payments to Daniels later emerged, quote, Mr. Trump's opinion was it was better to be dealing with it now and that it would have been bad to have that story come out before the election, unquote. She laid it up. She put it on a platter and gave it to him.
Yeah. That's fine. I still don't think it would have made a difference in the last weeks because I think enough people just didn't like and didn't trust Hillary. That Comey letter was all they needed.
To justify it.
And they still thought Trump was a joke. They still thought Trump had no chance. Even the people who disliked Hillary were like, he's not going to be president. This is her time. She's a Clinton. This is a legacy and an empire. I think all of the things come together. But I think in that last, at least month, that October.
It wouldn't have mattered.
I think it would have made people like, because, yeah, I just don't think it would have made as much of a difference. I just don't. We can't make any claims on what didn't happen, but I mean, he did win, and his actions in the subsequent 4 years, well, now 8 years since, has only emboldened his fans.
But he's lost support among suburban women.
I'll believe that when I see it, because in 2020 they voted
Wisconsin, suburban women are what delivered Democratic wins up and down the ticket in 2018, in 2020 in some parts.
I understand that, but let me finish my point. In 2016, especially white women in the suburbs, 43% voted for Trump. In 2020, 45%. I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm not saying I don't believe it. I'm just saying I'll believe it when I see it. I don't think that I think it has more to do with abortion than it does with Donald Trump, because that's the bigger thing. He is tied to this, but he's also so wishy-washy on this matter that no one can get a read on him because he doesn't want to be disliked. So he won't say national abortion ban. He's saying states' rights. So it's all over the place. I think it has more to do with suburban women and abortion than it does with Donald Trump. Because I thought in 2020
that would have been
the thing, but it didn't. They delivered 2 percentage points over what they did in 2016.
Well, maybe this will be a little icing on the cake, because now, of course, the former president has been really disturbed that he hasn't had throngs of his fans out in front of the courthouse showing their support. So he's tapped a couple sycophants to come and make appearances with him as he's going in and out of the courthouse, including J.D. Vance, who is from Ohio. And Byron Scott, I think, was there yesterday.
Byron Donalds.
Byron Donalds, thank you. Today, guess who showed up?
Oh, I wouldn't even begin to know without, like,
House
being already
Speaker
aware.
Mike Johnson.
I did see that. Yes, yes.
House Speaker Mike Johnson, the super Christian, showing up to speak to the press about how Donald Trump is being treated so unfairly. And, Calvin, we have a clip from Morning Joe talking about the Speaker of the House's appearance on behalf of the former president.
We should also remind people that when asked for his worldview, when Mike Johnson became Speaker of the House, nobody knew anything about him. He said, "You want to know my worldview? Go read the Bible. That's what I stand for." And now today, Joe, he's down at the courthouse in Lower Manhattan defending the guy who's on trial for allegedly paying off a porn star for the alleged affair he had while his wife was home with their infant son.
I mean, Donald Trump held a Bible. I saw the picture. It was upside down, but he held one. Good enough.
The Bible is pro-adultery, right? I mean, I have to admit.
The last time I checked, I believe one of the Ten Commandments was anti-adultery.
Oh, was it?
One of the Big Ten Commandments, yes.
I haven't read it recently.
Coming up next, the top 10 commandments.
Our top 5 favorites. Yeah. I think it is things like that that is going to cut through to some people.
I certainly hope so.
I do. For people, genuine people of faith, and I know genuine people of faith, who have got to be appalled by the apologies on behalf of this person. I would think they would be offended by that.
I would hope so. Really, I do.
I would hope so too, but unfortunately we see even more of the evangelical and Christian right that are supporting this man, because again, for those people that are on the fence and kind of wishy-washy about those suburban women that don't know who they're going to support in this election, no one's more responsible for the overturning of Roe v. Wade than former President Donald Trump.
Absolutely.
He had 3 appointments to the U.S. Supreme Court that led to all of those justices voting to overturn that precedent in Roe, lying throughout their confirmation hearing, saying that Roe was settled.
Yes.
And then as soon as they had a case come before them to give them the opportunity to overturn Roe in the Dobbs decision, the 3 Trump appointees made sure that that was what happened. So no one is more responsible than former President Donald Trump for where we are as a nation on the topic of abortion today. And the Christian right knows that.
And don't ever let them pretend that they aren't going to institute a federal national ban, because they absolutely will, no matter what they say, no matter what they claim. Mike Johnson has already said he's not going to take up a national ban next year. Don't believe him. That's not true.
Yeah.
All right. When we return, a new segment we're going to debut called Wanker of the Week. Stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, bad boys. What you gonna do? What you gonna do when they
they come for you. You chuck it on that one, you chuck it on this one, you chuck it on your mother and you chuck it on your father, you chuck it on your brother and you chuck it on your sister, you chuck it on that one and you chuck it on me. Bad boys, bad boys, what you gonna do?
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home of Mino and the Mayor.
Are you and your family weather ready? I'm Terry Barr, producer of the Slice of Wisconsin series. Wisconsin weather is ever-changing, and all of us with Civic Media believe awareness can make a difference. Our weather-ready stories will offer the information you need. Here's meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
Don't forget your sunscreen. It's true. You should be protecting your skin year-round, even in Wisconsin. But did you know spring is actually the peak time that you're at risk for getting a sunburn? Here's why. UV rays are more intense in the spring, even before temperatures warm up. And second, it's all due to the angle of the sun. UV radiation strengthens as the sun reaches a more direct angle. This happens throughout May and into June, leading up to the summer solstice on June 21st. A good reminder to be sunny weather ready, even if there's still some springtime cool outside. So slap that sunscreen on. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Sweet Cal B on the board, coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. Join the conversation. You can call, you can text at 855-752-4842 or leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. We are joined by our friend, colleague, and Civic Media's executive producer, Luke Mathers, is here as we kick around a little bit of the news. And just a reminder to download the Civic Media app wherever you get your apps. It's absolutely free, and it gives you the chance to listen to all of our stations all across the state, all the different shows, and you can call and text directly from the app. So download the Civic Media app. As we like to say here on Matt Nair on Air, we can't claim it's going to change the course of your entire life, but it shouldn't make it worse.
That's good branding right there.
Don't you think? I think it's a brand. Okay. We're highlighting a new segment we're calling Wanker of the Week. And I think it's very appropriate for this person named Johnny McEntee.
Ugh.
Johnny McEntee, not surprisingly, was a former White House aide and a body man to Donald Trump. And can I just say, have all presidents always had a body man?
Yes. Well, not like maybe not George Washington, but that goes back decades. That term
it does. Body
that term, man? That term and job goes back decades. It's someone. It's not a executive assistant. It's really a personal assistant. They'll carry bags. They'll walk with them. It's less policy. I mean, I can't say that a body man won't have opinions, but it is a legit real job that presidents have had throughout the decades, at least in the 20th century that I know of.
All right, that just always kind of jumped out at me like fixer. Because as far as I'm aware, Donald Trump is the only former president who had a fixer all of his career.
Every president has a fixer. Yeah. It's called the chief of staff.
At least to me, fixer has some other connotations.
Yeah.
I mean,
George W. Bush's fixer had a fixer. You got to think of all the Cheney lackeys that were running around the White House for them.
I guess that's true. Well, back to Mr. McEntee. Johnny McEntee is getting a little heat after this video. He posted this video on TikTok. Calvin, let's hear from Johnny McEntee, the former president's body man.
So I always keep this fake Hollywood money in my car. So when a homeless person asks for money, then I give them like a fake $5 bill. So I feel good about myself. They feel good. And then when they go to use it, they get arrested. So I'm actually like helping clean up the community. Getting them off the street.
What a Christian.
Isn't he a nice guy? So he keeps fake counterfeit.
He feels good about donating. Like that's an important part to pause on right there, too. Just he feels good about the donation of the $5 bill that's fraudulent.
Well, he feels good because they're going to get arrested when they try to pass counterfeit money that he gave them.
Only if the place is aggressive enough to do it. Usually if someone walks in, they're going to be like If I'm working at a, if I'm a minimum wage worker working customer service on a homeless person, anybody comes in with fake money and be like, this isn't real. I'm not calling the cops and be like, this isn't real. Can you pay with something else? No. All right. Sorry. And also this guy, I didn't know that he had any relationship to the Trump White House. Cause all I have seen, this is just one of the dozens of videos he puts out on a regular basis, full of vitriol, misogyny, racism, transphobia. He is just, and if you watch him, he's always got that just, I can't say the word on the air, but a but a grin on his face as to say, I'm right, you're wrong, and whatever.
And it's, and you're not going to like this.
He's
and,
a,
that, and that makes me happy.
He's a horrible, horrible person, and it makes absolute sense that he worked as Donald Trump's bottom
well,
man.
Don't think his influence is gone because he's a lead advisor for Project 2025.
Of course.
And I think it's important that we are all aware of the people involved with their blueprint for what they would like to see happen under the next Republican president and who is advising them. Johnny McEntee.
Yeah. Project 2025. I've heard people talk about like things like suspending or just getting rid of the Constitution altogether or starting over. That sounds like crazy talk to me.
Well, they've dabbled in it, like you guys touched on with the Postal Service. The U.S. Postal Service is a constitutionally founded office. Like, that is in our U.S. Constitution, and people just want to get rid of it and privatize it. Like, that's the weird part. So there have been conservative elected officials around the country that have dabbled in ideas like these for a very long time. But you're right. The scary part now is that they've got a concrete plan in
place
if they win again. Because as Greg talked about when we were discussing the 2016 and the 2020 aspects of some voting groups, there were a lot of people in 2016 that were just like, we don't know what's going to happen. Let's vote for Donald Trump because we don't know. Like, how bad could it be, kind of mindset?
Right.
But now we know. We know what has happened. And even since 2020, we know how worse things have gotten since 2020's election. Because since then, we had the January 6th insurrection when the supporters of the outgoing president did not want to accept, because Trump was fanning the flames, they didn't want to accept the outcome of a legal authorized election. Like, we've litigated it. We've audited it. We've done so much. There was no widespread election fraud. It just didn't happen.
Exactly.
But they fanned the flame, and we saw political violence at our nation's capital for the first time since, the War of 1812?
Yeah.
And they're laying the table for this next election as well.
And that's what he did leading up to 2020. Yes. He said, I'll accept the results if I win.
Well, and now his sycophants like Lindsey Graham and all the rest of them are saying the same thing. Well, we'll see if it's fair. No, we're not going to wait and see. You don't only accept the outcome of an election when your guy wins.
Yeah.
That's kind of not how it works.
Pat and I were
talking. That's not how democracy works.
No, it's not.
Pat and I were talking about this yesterday. The fact that no Republican will answer the question on the election results if Trump loses, to the point where now I'm thinking to myself, if a Republican says yes, I'll accept it. It's if it's free and fair, and I'll do that. That's now become a bold stance to take.
Yeah.
Which once, a couple of years ago, was just like, of course I'm going to. It's the election. I'll move on. I'll still be rich. But now they fear losing their party endorsement. They fear getting a primary candidate.
Right.
Because they're going to be like, yeah, I'll accept the election.
Well, anyway, well done, Johnny McEntee, our Wanker of the Week.
Wanker of the Week.
Debut segment. Well,
I'm going to get that Ted Lasso clip.
Well done, I guess. All right. Luke Mathers, thank you so very, very much for joining us. We'll see you in a few.
Always a pleasure.
Take care. News is on the way next. Stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome comedian and musical entertainer Rob Paravonian, who will sing a Beach Boys song about his grandpa. And we discuss the latest and greatest in binge-watchable entertainment.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights 7 till 9.
fabulous Farm Bay Pam Yonke here with the Midwest Farm Report live weekday mornings right here on WGBW. It's about your food and where it comes from. Tune in and learn. 5 a.m., 1590 a.m., 97.9 FM, the talk of Green Bay.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.